Welcome to the Get Balanced Podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced Program. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Get Balanced Program. I am your host, Dr. Donnie, and my special guest today on the program is FDNY Lieutenant Joe Lennon, firefighter, working very busy shifts over in the Brooklyn, Bronx, and the Queens District. Now, Joe is 20-plus years serving with FDNY. He was there for 9/11 as well. And Joe brings with us not just being a firefighter, but he is also a substance abuse mental health counselor with FDNY. And also with the IAFF, he is a lead instructor for peer support training, as well as on the curriculum development team. And he is also with the IAFF's emergency response team. So he's responded to places like the Las Vegas shootings, Hurricane Harvey in Houston, Charlottesville riots, and a multiple line of deaths and suicides with IAF members all throughout the United States. Joe received his education, his master's degree, from none other than the Columbia University, and I would like to welcome Joe to the show. Welcome aboard.
Well, thanks for having me, Dr. Don.
Absolutely. Hey, let's get right into it. I want you, if you would, tell the listeners a little bit. I know I mentioned it in my intro, but a little bit more about the work that you're involved in. I mean, you're with FDNY as a firefighter, but then also, I believe, you know, as mentioned, you have the peer support as also a mental health counselor. I mean, you're wearing a lot of hats, aren't you?
I've done a few things. I've done it more like a sombrero at times. There is no one hat that I'm really wearing. I'm a firefighter with the FDNY for the last 21 and a half years, I guess. A lot of firefighters and cops, we count those half years, like 4.5-year-old little boys, and firefighters will have 21 and a half years at this point.
That's right.
And I got promoted 7 years ago to lieutenant. Worked in some pretty busy areas most of my career, continue to, and have been doing that, like I said, for almost 22 years. I am a counselor also with our counseling services unit. I've been doing that unofficially probably 13 plus years, and officially as a counselor probably the last 6-7 years or so, like that. I went and got my I became a substance abuse counselor with our in-house addiction treatment program, and while I was there, I went to school and got my credentials to be a substance abuse counselor. And in working with firefighters that was primarily a substance abuse, I realized, you know, what came first? Was it the chicken or the egg? Was it the substance abuse that was causing mental health issues, or was it the mental health issues that was leading to some sort of substance abuse? And the two were very intertwined, I found. And a lot of areas where I was dealing with firefighters that had came in there for a substance abuse issue really turned out to be a mental health issue. And I felt very, very unarmed, you know, uneducated and a little out of my league to really handle those type of areas. So my boss had encouraged me to go to school possibly and go get my master's degree in social work, which I did while I was there. And just finished that up last year, got my master's from Columbia.
And that's just not just a regular school you went to, is it?
Oh, it's an Ivy League school. Yes, that's what I hear.
Yeah, it's Columbia University. Just a little Ivy League school.
Yeah, my colleagues like to break my chops about that one a little bit. Oh, Mr. Ivy League guy. Yeah. That was something that was probably one of the accomplishments of my life there. You know.
Hey, we have dogs barking as in a sign of this is really life. This is what work-life balance is about, right? We record from home. Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, you and the listeners might hear my dog snoring in the background, though.
Well, he's a loud one. And my girlfriend's too. So my one doesn't bark, doesn't bite, doesn't do anything. The other two that she has, they're very active, very, very active young little dogs.
Yeah.
So I went and got my, just finished up my master's from Columbia there. last year. Again, it was, you know, one of the major accomplishments of my life. And it probably threw my work balance off pretty dramatically at that point. Prior to that, when I first started becoming a substance abuse counselor, became involved with the IAFF, the International Association of Firefighters. We were putting together a training program to do peer support. So I was very fortunate in being in the early phases of that, and putting that together with about 30, 40 other peer support members from around the country. And we were like a jury being sequestered in a separate hotel room for a good week straight, and we hashed it out. There was a lot of work went into it beforehand, and then while we got together for that week, we worked it out, and then came up with a really good 2-day training program for peer support members, of which I'm one of the instructors. I've been really fortunate to be involved with that. And as a result of that, there have been various instances that have happened throughout the country, and they've called upon our peer support teams to put some teams together, various suicides of active members, line of duty deaths, any major active shooters. I've been to the Vegas shooting. I went to the El Paso mass shooting just last summer, summer before. Charlottesville after the riots there, we've sent teams to the Pulse nightclub down in Florida. So the IFF has been very, very involved in helping out the peers in that aspect. I've been really very fortunate to be a part of that in the ground roots, doing all that work. Very, very rewarding. And it's great to give back to help out our fellow firefighters.
Oh, absolutely. And we appreciate all that you are doing there. And you definitely have your sombrero full.
Yeah.
When it comes to all that. Hey, let's talk to me a little bit about the other hat you wear in life. More on the family side and health and wellness, and what do you do to stay in shape?
I am I'm a dad. I've got an 11-year-old girl, and I've got a 18-year-old stepdaughter, just went off to school. And my work life balance has been thrown off a little bit. I'm just finishing up my second marriage a couple of years ago. It was probably at the height of grad school, which was logged in over 100 hours a week between working in the firehouse, doing my 24-hour shifts there, teaching with the IFF, going to school, and doing my internship. Was very, very time-consuming. And,
you've
got a PhD, I'm sure you're well aware of the time consumption that is involved in the dedication. And, you know, my wife at the time, we had to sit down before I even applied to that school. And she said, you know, I'll be able to handle everything. And, you know, you just go and you just focus on school. And it turned out to be a lot more, I think, than both of us had really anticipated.
And, yeah.
You know, when you go to school later on in life, you really have a different perspective. You really are going for the education piece of it. And, you know, grad school is great because you got to apply those concepts, whatever that concept was, and put it towards your field. You know, I wanted to be in the PTSD type of mentality, CBD, and the various aspects of treatment. And I did a lot of work with the military. You know, a lot of my studies, I took a few classes, and they didn't have nearly as much as I thought they would. But I did part of my internship at the VA hospital out here in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a great experience to really see, because the firefighters, we really don't have that much data, and research has really gone into it. I believe now the IFF is looking into getting some federal grants to get some research and data done on that, because firefighters across the nation have a very high percentage of suicide rate, right up there with the military. Right. The police as well. We've had a rash of the NYPD a few months ago. I think we had about 10 of them in like a 2-month span that died by suicide. That was...
Yeah.
And the real reason for it is that we fit that demographic of the person most likely to die by suicide, which is the middle-aged white male. And you look around fire departments and police departments throughout the country, and a good percentage of them are middle-aged white males. And as a result, is it really the PTSD? Is it really the lack of sleep? I'm sure it doesn't help it, but just the stressors of life and how we cope with life. You know, as a male in this male-dominated kind of society that we have, it adds to the to the amount of responsibilities that a man would have on his plate.
Yes. And I'll tell you, Joe, that's where I try to put some of my work in this work-life balance piece. And that's like, when I say work-life balance, to me, I define work-life balance as, are we aligning our day-to-day priorities, day-to-day behaviors with our priorities in life, right? And I try to get to those men and dads, right, that before they are in need of sitting down with a counselor such as yourself, usually they're going at that length right before they're at the tipping point, right? And where I'm trying to shore things up in my work is that, hey, let's get your day-to-day behaviors in alignment with your priorities in life. And maybe we can overt, you know, not trying to put you out of work, but, you know, go to you for some other things, except for when it's about ready to tip over. And that's where I think, you know, building that resilience or just having, and we know that there's science out there today of, you know, if you're happier at home, if you have good relationships at home or those special people in your life, it helps in everything in life at that point. It truly does. And take me back to, you said you were finishing up your second marriage and that, you know, you got to the point to where you realized both realized maybe, you know, you bit off more than you could chew at the time with it. You could, I'm sure, and I've been there 9 years ago, I was there. You knew it was going downhill and that's tough, especially with children involved, right? It's hard. Talk to me a little bit about that how that was making you feel at the time. Did you recognize you were out of balance and what did you do?
At that point, I was just starting my third year. It was a 3-year part-time program for working professionals. So I was about to take a leave of absence. Good thing I had some good guidance by one of my mentors at school there. And she said, Joe, I've seen so many adults in your position, you know, drop out at this point because some life event happens. Said, you're 2/3 of the way done. She says, just bull your way through. And this way you can be done and finish. So many people do not go back and do not finish. Our marriage was already done and finished prior to that. I don't think that would have saved it in any way, shape. When I first recognized it, I realized it was a lot more than I had signed up for. And I was like, what something's going to have to give in this area. Something is going to have to be the sacrificial lamb. You know, I did not want it to be my marriage. I did not want it to be my family. But my whole world had really revolved around this whole peer support and being a part of the, you know, the greater good for my fellow members, which I have, you know, I didn't grow up chasing fire trucks. I didn't want to be a firefighter my whole life. You know, I graduated college and had a suit and tie guy job my whole life. I was not going to be a civil servant. But since the day I signed up, I dove into that head first, and this was definitely my calling in life. This is something that I was born to do, and I lived and breathed that entire that team concept. I really dug into that really hard when I first got on the job, for, you know, even still to this day, but not nearly as much as it was early on. And I really put my work, and you know, we are very big on social aspect within the fire department. Many, many social events, of which I don't think I missed one of them during my whole first, you know, 10, 15 years on the job, and was very, very active in every single thing. I played soccer on the soccer team. We had a guy on our team had died at the World Trade Center. So we set up a scholarship in his name and wound up traveling around all of Europe playing soccer and really having fully loving the whole concept of being a New York City firefighter. You know, I was there before 9/11, after 9/11, and to see the outpouring of love and care from the rest of the world was really inspirational and really, I probably, unfortunately, loved the job almost more than I loved my first wife, which was so sad. She's a great gal. We're still great friends to this day. We talk all the time.
Wonderful.
Young and dumb, and we didn't have any kids then, but the balance was definitely way off. I definitely put my work and the whole culture of the fire department ahead of everything else. And, you know, part of that word culture is cult.
Yes. Know? Yeah.
Of like-minded, similar folks with the same morals and values. And that's what the fire department is. That's what all first responders are. We're of that same mold and same mindset quite a bit.
Do you have any regret, Joe, those first 10 years or so?
Oh, no. I had a great time. You know, looking back,
would you do anything differently?
What I have done differently? Well, if I didn't do what I did, I wouldn't be where I'm at today, I guess. You know, every event that has occurred in my life has really taught me a lot. You know, I work with a great counselor who says, I never lose. I win or I learn.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I really want to consider any of the things that I did as, you know, losses. You know, I went through a couple of significant events in my life. You know, I was there for 9/11. I lost a good amount of friends there. Some years later, I got burned at a fire pretty badly. I was dragged out unconscious. You know, I was in a hyperbaric chamber for 3 days. I got skin grafts and burns down like 20% of my body and serious lung damage. Didn't know if I was ever going to come back. Didn't know if I was going to live. You know, they gave me my last rites the first night. The CO poisoning was pretty high. Yeah. And came out of that. And that's it. I'm just going to party like a rock star, and kind of went off the deep edge for a little while there. You know, once I was lost, now I am found.
Was that in around, if I recall, 2004 from reading?
Yep. Yeah, that was in 04. The day Super Bowl Sunday, Janet Jackson had her costume malfunction with Justin Timberlake. That day was, I ruined one of the best Super Bowls for the guys in my firehouse, as they say. Because
never lived that down.
Yeah, I wound up unconscious for, you know, and they sedated me into a coma for a few days. And I came out of that definitely a changed man. Went off the deep edge for a while. And do I regret it? Yeah, in a certain sense. It definitely cost me my first marriage. I definitely learned a lot. And then, you know, you go through a couple of events like that and you realize, yeah, I've got some issues that really need to be addressed. So, you know, I wound up in counseling myself. And, you know, I guess the best robbers were always the best cops. I mean, the best cops are always the best robbers. So I guess maybe that's why I'm a pretty good counselor, as a lot of people say.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe, you know, asking you the question regret may not be the best choice of questions. If I'm looking back at it, if you could give advice to the young firefighter coming into the field today, the service, what advice would that be, given that you, all of your experience and everything, when it comes to the whole big picture of living this life of a firefighter?
Being a firefighter is what I do. It's not who I am. And it took me a while because that was my identity.
You were you identified as a firefighter back in the day.
First and foremost. Oh yeah. Yeah. And now it is what I do. It's my occupation. It's my career. It's definitely my calling in life, but it's not who I am. It's not the person that I am. And it took some time and to come to that realization, you know, also a little bit of therapy. there's a lot of testosterone within the FDNY, and I'm sure most of us in as first responders. And I got really caught up in that, a lot of pride and ego that needed to be chipped away. And realize that, you know, we're all replaceable on this job. You're just a number in a sense. You know, some will come in, they'll do a better job. Others will come in, do a worse job. The only job you're really not replaceable as is a husband and a father. Mm. And to go and to make that secondary, realizing that the job is just a job, you know, and take that away from me now what part, what am I? You know, my lung issue was pretty severe after I got burned, and wasn't sure if I was going to come back. You know, they have some testing, pulmonary function test, that I was barely under the legal limit of what they would allow. And I was really distraught that I am no longer going to be a New York City firefighter. What am I going to do? Who am I? What, you know, I'll be that hole in the donut. This is my whole identity. This is who I am, what I am. What am I going to be after that? And thankfully, you know, I was able to get back and change my perspective. You know, I got a new pair of glasses, I guess, and look at life through a different lens nowadays. Social work school definitely helped me to get rid of my rose-tinted glasses. You know, as everything is all nice and peachy, and has really opened my eyes quite a bit to you know, the level of power, racism, oppression, and privilege that I have afforded my just being an adult white male. You know, that females in the fire department are not awarded. You know, minorities are not awarded. Has really helped me to look at things in a very, very different perspective. You know.
Yeah, that's very good. I appreciate you sharing that. Let me take you to, you said you have an 11-year-old daughter and an 18-year-old stepdaughter. Your 11-year-old daughter, is that with your first wife or second wife?
Second
wife? Yeah.
Okay. First, we didn't have kids together. Yeah, it's with the second one.
And living close with you, get to see her?
Pretty often, you know, as often as dad does. You know, we live in the same town, so it's pretty
good.
Shared custody at this point, half and half for the most part. So it's nothing much has changed. We're just living in two different places for the most part, and she shares back and forth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do get to see her quite a bit, which is
that's awesome.
Not too common.
I did that with my youngest daughter. She went 50-50 back and forth for several years. And then just last year came over. Well, she's a junior in high school now. So she made up her mind. She's going to come over full time.
Yeah, mine's getting to that point too. She's getting a little older now and she's kind of deciding where to go back and forth.
Yeah, getting to be about that age. Yeah, my third daughter is about her age when she made the choice. Yeah, they all develop at different ages.
Yep.
I say, but and that comes with its own unique, you know, work life balance, you know, challenges and all of that. But take me back. I want to shift gears with you a little bit, Joe. Is that when the pandemic hit and when the rise and, you know, when it hit New York City and all of that? What were first? I want to ask you, you as an individual firefighter, you know, the challenges that put on you.
Mm-hmm.
In your work-life balance. And then secondly, I would like to ask you, you as a counselor and peer support, you know, what did you observe and, you know, all the, I imagine it was chaos for a while.
Yeah.
At least that's what I was seeing on the news, put it that way.
Yeah, it was definitely a war zone. You know, you were doing like immediate triage and so many people were not calling because of fear of going to the hospitals and what was going to happen at the hospital. They were going to contract additional. So by the time people are calling 911 system, they were pretty bad off. They were really, you know, we're showing up and on a typical day within the FDNY, we have a separate EMS. Our fire and EMS are two separate branches of the FDNY. And we don't interact with them too much. We are primarily firefighters and we're certified first responders, which is a level below an EMT. We just don't transport. That's basically the only difference, but we can defibrillate and use the AED, advanced electrode defibrillator, on people.
Yeah.
But during that time, it was a very big shock, especially for some of the new kids coming in, because typically in a month span, say for argument's sake, some of the busier companies that have a higher EMS response area, they're maybe doing 4 or 5 CPR a month, you know, if that roughly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And some companies were doing 6, 7, 8 CPRs within a 24-hour period, and none of them were making it back. And these are not 90-year-old people, you know, that are cancer ridden, that are, you know, 90 pounds soaking wet. These are relatively healthy 30, 40, 50 year old people with no prior conditions, no nothing. And we're walking in and, you know, now you're in the middle of a living room doing CPR on somebody and the entire family is, you know, standing around them screaming and crying hysterical. And this went on and on and on for a 24 hour clip. You would go out on one call, come back, shower up, you know, decontaminate yourself. You're back in service, go right back to the same thing. You know, you have a fever cough, use, you know, precautions and you'd gown up because we didn't know that it was a fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
Going on. And, you know, having to make those, you know, having to talk to the family members, you know, I'm sorry, we've done all that we could. There's really nothing more that we can do. And that was, you know, pretty tough as an officer to make, have those conversations and to kind of keep the morale of the troops up in a sense, because it was a dark place for many, many people, you know? And for us as first responders, it was kind of cool to see. You know, it's almost had that like post 9/11 feel to it in a sense where, yeah. You know, people were so grateful for the firefighters. Thank you for all your services that you've done. I'm sorry for the losses that you guys have incurred. And, you know, you guys keep putting up the good fight and keep working down there at the pile and try to find your brothers and sisters. And that it was loosely along that line, you know, but I'm glad because it did spread to all the other first responders. You know, my second wife is a nurse and she was working in a pretty serious COVID facility that was a temporary setup hospital. And, yeah. You know, hundreds, thousands of folks that she was seeing on a daily basis. And she was coming home and telling me some stories of the second half that it really was as bad as you may have seen, you know, if not worse. I mean, they were just refrigerator trucks full of dead bodies at certain points outside the hospitals and the parking lots because the hospitals were just overrun. They could not bear to stand. It was getting pretty, pretty bad.
Yeah.
That was me. How did
that affect you? Going home?
Definitely. I had some rides home with the radio off, you know, definitely leaned on my support system, you know, some of my other peers and talking about, you know, I'm not the only one going through this. You know, I had a pretty rough 24. How was yours? And that definitely normalized an abnormal situation because it was not our norm by any means.
When you said you'd go home with the radio off, is that meaning you, is that a way to unplug yourself from the situation?
Yeah, you definitely are rehashing what had just gone on for the last 24 hours. You know, you'd shower up, get out of there and get in your car and like, wow, that was a long 24. And that was happening more often than not. You know, that after some rough 24s, you may do that. And, you know, make a phone call or two because I have like an hour commute. So usually I'm on the phone back and forth. But there were times where not even, you know, just like, wow, that was a pretty long 24 there that had just occurred. You know, and the fear of what I'm going to be bringing home to my family. You know, who's to say, you know, both myself and my ex, we were both first responders. So what is she bringing home? What am I bringing home? The fear of the unknown. You know, personally, and then on the counseling side, I'm also involved after the office closes, we have an on-call service. So it's basically a 24-hour hotline. So that phone number will roll over to another counselor. There's myself and a handful of others that we've all got a master's in social work clinical. So we are part of like a crisis intervention team and we're fielding calls. The call volume with us in the counseling service unit was up 25% over what it typically would be. And a lot of them were coming from seasoned EMTs that were, you know, like I said, 15, 20 years on the job in some of the busiest areas. And they are just overwhelmed, just burnt out. And I mean, I think at one point they brought in like 500 ambulances from around the country to help us out with our call volume. It had almost doubled the call volume of what we had. It was pretty significant and people really had, and they just wanted to talk, you know, quite often by the end of that phone call, they're okay. And that's, you know, a big part of peer support. You know, I'm not only a counselor, but I'm one of the peer support members on our team. And a lot of people, they just want somebody to talk to that can understand and can listen and speak the same language. That's one of the reasons why I stay involved also, you know, to break down the stigma of mental health, you know, to let people know it's okay to be not okay. especially right. when we have something that's out of our norm, you know, because our norm is a much different than civilian world norm. You know, if we're talking about, you know, doing CPR on a 90-year-old woman and you're cracking some ribs, that's kind of normal to crack ribs. That's when you kind of know you're going far enough, almost, in a sense. It's a little sad, but
yeah.
To tell somebody who's a civilian that, they'll be like, what? That's crazy. What are you? But then when something like this, when this COVID epidemic hit, it was way out of our norm. And people have a really tough time processing that and processing it out and having a support system around them that was understanding of it and really understood what they were really going through.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing as well is a lot of their spouses and family members are cooped up at home. They're not able to go anywhere. They're not able to do anything. So what are they doing? They're searching on the internet and they're reading about this COVID and what it's doing. And you know, they're watching live TV, live stream of certain events that are going on. We have something here in New York, the Citizen app. I don't know if you have it out by you, but it's basically civilians that are just live, like Facebook Live, in a sense. So they're broadcasting everything that's going on in every scene.
And it's, wow.
It's not monitored by anyone. So any event that's going on at any location, you're pretty much on camera live, you know, from multiple angles all the time. So family members are watching this Citizen app and, you know, not just fearing for their spouses, but fearing for themselves, what they could possibly be contracting and bringing home. You know?
Yeah. I think that's been a fear. I know with other firefighters that I've talked to on the show that, you know, people are sort of like, sometimes it's that fear of, you know, you're feeling like you people are just hands off a little bit from you, like, you know, let me shift with you a little bit, Joe, is that when we talk about work-life balance, if you will, what in your eyes is work-life balance? How would you define it?
It's a delicate dance that I do quite often. And how would I define the work-life balance? Staying on the beam, not being too far to one extreme or the other, and at least having some awareness to recognize when I'm going from one side to the next a little too far. And if I can't, I'm usually surrounded by some people that'll put me in check and let me know that you're doing a little too much on this end and to reel it back a little bit.
Yeah.
My supervisors, you know, my boss within the counseling unit, he's real good at doing that and has told me no, because I won't say no quite often. You know, I got to put my cape on and I've here I come to save the day, you know.
Yeah.
Help is needed. I'm going. And quite often they've had to tell me, no, you stay here. We have others that are willing and able to do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets off balance, you know, sometimes there's collateral damage. I'm sure that occurs, you know, and something's got to give in that, whether it's my family life, my work life, myself and probably a lot of firefighters, sometimes that is our peace. That is our serenity time, because things at home might not be so good. You know,
mm-hmm.
Me at that one point was during school, you know, work was, I couldn't even be at work. I was at school 24 hours a day. And then when I was home, I was still at school. My mind was always going, the research, I would be at the firehouse and hiding up in a corner, you know, typing papers and reading and,
yeah,
you know, got like a fourth grade reading speed and having to read 500 pages a week and writing 20, 30 page papers was way out of my league. And there was certain times when I was doing certain things. I remember I was teaching a class up in Canada one time when the Vegas shooting had gone about, and it's a 2-day class that we teach. And when I'm away teaching, I'm not really reading the news or watching anything too often. And the next morning came in and was given some examples of some terrorist attacks and such. And one of them had brought up the shooting that had occurred, and I was like, whoa, what, really? So I called my boss. I let him know, hey, listen, I'm available. I'm teaching right now in Canada. I can get on a plane and go right to Vegas, right from here, and I'll be there, you know, as soon as this class is over. And he's like, whoa. Go home and spend some time with your family. You've been away now for a few days, 3-4 days, plus you're gonna have to go back, go to the firehouse for a 24-hour. You're not gonna see them for days. I'm like, yeah, but this is like a massive shooting. This is what I'm going to school for. This is my whole entire thing. This is, you know, I got to put my cape on.
Yeah.
Thankfully, you know, eventually a week later, I did go, but having good people around me to tell me when to say when, because my brakes don't work so good sometimes. And, when I first got into this work and you start to help out and you really start to see, you do make a difference in some people's lives with the smallest little bit of active listening, being there, being present, you know, listening to somebody who has probably not had somebody listen to them in a long time.
Yeah.
Empathy and to really give them a little guidance and to share some experiences that could possibly change their trajectory in life and really put them on a different path is, you know, very rewarding. The downside is in the field of mental health, in counseling, you're rarely going to see the benefits of anything that you do, and you're rarely going to get a pat on the back. I'm all about the applause. So I like the immediate gratification, but you know, sometime down the line, it can be a year, 2-3 years down the line. And I was eventually wind up running into people say, you know, you'll never realize the impact that you had. You and I had that conversation in the kitchen table at midnight that one night, and it really helped me put things in perspective a little bit. And the more I did that, you know, you feel good about yourself. You help other people and it makes you feel good.
Right.
And,
well, let me see if I can give you a question that when listeners listen to this podcast, they're going to give you a pat on the back. All right, here you go. Here's one for you. Cause when you're talking, when you said that active listening, and I did a piece on that last week on active listening, but, and as a, you know, with all the hats you wear, you have 50-50, you know, your daughter, 11-year-old daughter goes back and forth between you and your ex-wife. But with that active listening, could you give some advice to other dads that have that divorce, you know, custody, they're seeing their children, maybe not, you know, not 100% of the time, but what's been some of the greatest memories of, I mean, you know, with that active listening or being that father, what do you enjoy being a father about the most, and any advice you can give to other dads out there?
Put down the cell phone, turn off the cell phone.
Put down the cell phone. Yeah.
Regardless, I get a lot of phone calls. I get a lot of emails, got a lot of things that need to be responded to that are not, you know, your typical 9-to-5. Putting that away and listen with your eyes. I try to say, you know, be there and be present with your child. Shutting off everything in the outside. I know it's very difficult. Your time is limited. So that's an area that I'm definitely going to focus on much more moving forward. Is that when I'm with her, to be with her. All too many times, I've been on the phone, you know, sorry, honey, I have to take this call. It's going to, could be a half hour, 45 minute phone call that needs to occur. But shutting it off and designated certain times, you know, scheduling the time with her and to be there and to be present, to be completely mindful and in the moment, not living, you know, in the future of what should be happening or in the past of what had happened. Staying present, keeping your feet where your head is probably one of the most difficult things that I've had to do. You
know? How does she react when you are fully present with her and doing that active listening? What do you see, a noticeable difference in her?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a much more deeper connection between the two of us. And I can tell when she's not doing it or I'm not doing it, because she's at the age where she has her own cell phone. And so she's making TikTok videos and doing all that, you know, Instagram, not the Instagram, but yeah. You know, the kids nowadays, this is all about selfies and doing little things, and she can be on there for a little while. So I remind her as well, you know, let's put it down for a little while. Let's spend some time together.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things I used to do with my daughters, and now I do it a little bit, but not as often. But when they were little, I'd have one of them sit on one side of the sofa And I would sit on the other side of the sofa and we'd throw our legs up over each other and square off and just look at each other. No TV, no phones or anything. And I would just ask, so tell me something good that happened today, you know, and I'll try to engage him in a conversation. And I'll never forget when my youngest, she was probably about 7 years old or so. You know, after I asked her a question, I had this practice with her. She came back and said, well, Daddy, tell me something that happened good today for you. You know? And I was like, oh my gosh, she's got it. You know, she gets it. We're going to have meaningful dialogue here. So I like that too, that one-on-one time do you ever take your daughter out on a date? Go out for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, anything like that?
All the time. Daddy-daughter dates were a pretty regular thing for us. She never realized it, but that was my intention.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's daddy's little girl. So I really, since she was born, you know, I'd always have her out. We're going to the park. I live in a beach community. We have a boardwalk right there. Going to the beach, going to the park, going bike riding. As soon as she was old enough to put on a little seat in front of my handlebars, going up and down the boardwalk all the time. Do I take her on dates yet?
That's awesome.
But then she became older and now she wants her friends to come along with them. So I say, okay, but the phones have to go in the glove compartment. I'm not paying for you guys pizza and ice cream and, you know, you're not, and I'm talking to a three-way conversation here.
Yeah.
Take them out, get a third row seat in the car. So I'd have, you know, 3, 4, 5 little 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old girls going out for a whole day of, you know, go to the movies, pizza, ice cream. I'd have them out for 3, 4 hours. And some of the other dads are like, are you okay with this? You're, you know, this is a lot. You got my two kids, your kid, and the other kid. I was like, yeah, man, I love this. I really thoroughly enjoy this. I loved all those times.
Yes.
That's in between. So it was a little different shift that we're both trying to figure out this next phase of life.
Yeah. Yeah. What's going well right now when you think of work-life balance and, you know, you mentioned this phase of life, how do you sort of figure that out and what are you looking forward to a few years down the road?
What's going well in my work life? Well, I am studying for my captain's exam, which is horrific. You know, it's like grad school all over again.
Is that right?
Yeah. We have 22 books, 2 milk crates full of nonsense, most of it. Just you have to pack it all into your brain. And, you know, just finishing up with grad school, I needed some time for my brain to deflate. But the test only comes around once every 4 years. So it's like grad school all over again, you know. So that is really time consuming. Prior to COVID, I was hitting it pretty hard. And, you know, typically you have to put in at least 40 hours a week studying. It's almost like studying for a bar exam. It's really insane, the amount of material. And the competition is so heavy. You know, we have 13,000 firefighters now at the officers' ranks, so there'll be 2,000-3,000 that are going to be taking this test alongside me. So if you're not in a really top percentage, you're probably not going to happen. So, and you waited only 4 years, and it's what's going well? That's not going so well right now. COVID, I was on a target to hit it, and then COVID put a damper on it, and then they delayed the test date for a few months, and now it looks like it's going to not happen until 2021. So
is that right?
Really been bad for everyone, you know, across the job that's studying for it.
Yeah.
What is going well is that I guess COVID gave me the opportunity to reconnect, I guess, with my daughter and to turn off and to unplug, you know, disconnect to reconnect in so many ways. You know, homeschooling was very challenging for a while there. I don't know how to do fifth grade math, turns out. You know, they do it differently nowadays.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
But going well, I'm in a new relationship, which is really, really pretty cool. You know, a very similar, like-minded person. She's a runner like myself. We get out, we run, we kayak, we stand up paddleboard. She puts self-care at a very high priority. Every day we have to get out and do something, which is not something that I typically would do. I would I don't usually like drift off into a peaceful slumber. I usually pass out at 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning after getting everything done for the day that I need to get done.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit different. Having a good full day and just getting that heart rate out, getting it up for, you know, a half hour, hour every day is something that she puts as a high priority.
You know, and you join in with her, huh?
Yeah. Definitely running together, staying together is really, it's been really pretty cool. So what am I looking forward to in the future? Probably a future with her. And it's looking good so far. Am I looking forward to, you know, so many guys after 20 years, we can retire in New York. Am I looking forward to retirement? Not so much. It's not something I'm dying for, but if right now all my parts are working well, so physically I'm all right. My lungs, my knees, my shoulders, back is holding up, you know, enough for me to be full duty. And I'm in probably the best shape of my life right now at 52. Running has definitely helped out tremendously. I was hopefully going to do the marathon, New York City Marathon in November, but they canceled that. Hopefully next year, my parts will all be working well, and I'll be able to do that next year. Check that off my bucket list.
Yeah.
Looking forward to just enjoying the ride, man. You know, I'm really enjoying the ride of what I've been doing in the direction that, you know, whoever has led me here has really helped me out to be put in position to help others and just to remain humble and kind. You know, that country western song, try to always remain humble and kind.
I know it. Yeah. That I do.
Just here, little vessel to help other people. Just glad to be in a position where I can be a peer support member. And, you know, I guess God has given me the gift of gab in as an instructor, and I do pretty well in that area. Most of the, in saying I do well, I get very good feedback in that I'm able to convey what we have put together in a peer support model and bring it to the masses throughout the country in a way that is, you know, educational as well as entertaining for them and for me. And something I really enjoy getting back out there and doing that again. Right now we're going to be doing virtual online peer support models. We're trying to lean towards that. We're looking forward to getting out there again in the real world after COVID kind of settles down. Or, you know, we can cure everything at that kitchen table in a firehouse. We can solve all relationship problems, all financial problems. You have a problem with your car, anyone, they can solve everything. I'm surprised we haven't come up for a cure for COVID just yet.
That's right. Yeah. Now, with when we talk about a little bit of the work life, more on the work life balance and that self care component, and I know with you, with your mental health counseling, what advice do you have for firefighters and first responders when it comes to keeping active? You know, it is important, your physical exercise. What you eat does affect, I mean, we have science there, right? It does affect your energy levels, your moods, everything like that. What advice do you have for firefighters and first responders when it comes to their self-care?
Schedule it.
Yeah.
You can easily get caught up in day-to-day activities and not realize that, you know, a day, two, three have gone by. One of the things that we do teach at the end of, it's a 2-day training program. So at the end of the first day, we finish up on self-care and we give everyone a homework assignment and their eyes roll as soon as we do that. Homework. Well, this is not supposed to be homework here. So we say, we want, you know, I want you to think of something that you do for fun. What do you do for enjoyment? Not take your kids to their ball game. Not some obligation that you're obligated to do. What would you do if you had nothing else to do that is going to put a smile on your face? If that's nothing more than taking the dog for a walk, you know, going to the gym, going for a run, yoga, meditation, going for a walk in the park, whatever it is that is your little Zen world that's going to take you and unplug you away for 20 minutes, a half hour, an hour, whatever that might be, try to schedule that in your day. And we're going to come back tomorrow and you're going to report to me. And we're going to see how that worked out for you. And I got to tell you, Doc, probably half the time, you know, life gets in the way. Was anybody unable to do what they left here and wanted to do? And, you know, inevitably half of the room was not able to do what they had set forward to. Just because life gets in the way, you know. Honey, on the way home, can you pick up, you know, milk and bread on the way home and grab a pizza because we were out with the kids all day playing ball and we didn't have time to cook dinner. And next thing you know, it's 8, 9 o'clock at night and, you know, it's homework and bed and bath and all that stuff. And it's difficult to wait, I was supposed to do something. I had to schedule. I was supposed to take care of myself, you know.
Yeah.
So how do we recharge our own batteries if we don't really schedule it? So that's one of the big things that I would try to, you know, I try to revolve my day around that next day. Look at the weather. Is it going to be nice and sunny? Okay, we'll do something outdoorsy. If not, what can you do if you can't go outside? You know, what happens if you're injured and you can't do what you typically would do? Then what? You know, if your thing was running and now you have an injury and you cannot run no more, you know, doing CrossFit and you can no longer do CrossFit anymore, what are you going to do in lieu of that? Because if that's the only thing you have in your toolbox, then it's going to be pretty bad if you're not able to take care of yourself. You know, we have to keep that mask on ourselves. If we come across a civilian victim of a fire, they tell us, keep that mask on yourself that whole entire time. Never take that off. Because if you take that mask off and put it on them, then they're going to be dragging two people out of there unconscious. So we have to breathe fresh air, right? In a plane, what do they say? In the unlikely event of a water landing, oxygen mask will drop down from the ceiling. Place it over your face first before helping others.
Yeah.
As firefighters and as caretakers, we don't do that. You know, we take care of everyone else. We're like the, you know, the shoe repair guys that are walking around with holes in their shoes.
Right.
All too often. We got to change your cylinder, change your batteries on a regular basis. That would probably be mine. And don't get too wrapped up in the, you know, testosterone of the fire service.
You
know, it's a job, you know, it's an incredible job. It's a wonderful, you know, I'm so blessed and so happy that my career path led me this, you know, but it is a job. It is not, you know, it's what you do. It's not who you are. Try to distance yourself a little bit from that. And, you know, make sure you have your priorities straight. That if they take this away from you, now what? Now what are you going to do? Are you going to be the hole in the donut without any life skills, without any social support around you that are not firefighters? You know, that's one thing we get wrapped up into. You know, mostly all of our friends are all firefighters. You know, you spend time with them quite often, and take that away. Now what? Now who do you have? I don't know.
Yeah. No, very good advice. Yeah, with 9/11 being on Friday, this podcast will air on Monday, a few days afterwards. What will you be doing on 9/11 this year?
I will be working, actually. And I'm going to be working in the neighborhood of my old firehouse, so it's going to be pretty cool. Every year on 9/11, we have a big ceremony because our house lost 5 guys. It's like a good reunion for all of us that were around during that time. So we may not go to too many events of our old firehouse, but we all definitely get together on September 11th. And we have a pretty big get together breakfast that morning. We observe a couple of moments of silence when each of the planes hit both towers and then when they fell again. And it's a good time of reflection for all of us. You know, it's a sad time. Of course, the entire month becomes pretty difficult for a lot of folk. You know, but as I say, out of so much bad that happened, there was so much good and love that was shown to us worldwide after those events, you know, similar to what happened here in COVID during the COVID pandemic, where it was really an appreciation and awareness of what it is that we do on a daily basis. And on any given Sunday, you could possibly not come home. I'll be there. I'll be with my brothers and sisters and you know, I'll be working, but it's something that is always a big time of reflection. And now with COVID, we have to have it socially distanced. It's going to be in a parking lot. It's not going to be the same, but we'll still be around.
Do you have any friends over at NYPD?
I do. Yeah, sure.
And you know, when you talk, when you're mentioning, Joe, about, you know, the love and everything, the support from 9/11, post 9/11, COVID, I'm thinking about in today's world. I mean, I know in the firefighters, they don't get hit the way law enforcement is getting hit lately. And I teach at a university, and I just got, you know, weekly news digest type thing. And it informed me that the university's traditional blue mask to honor police officers, firefighters, and first responders has been canceled. And that's got my blood boiling, to be honest with you. Yeah, it does. They're going to replace it with a blessing of personnel and vehicles for anyone that wants to attend.
As a result of COVID, social distancing, or just because of what it represents, that it's against the current movements, or?
What it represents against the current movements. Catholic University too, by the way. Yeah. Has my blood boiling. But with your friends over at NYPD, how, and with the current movements and everything, how, any insight on what, I mean, it's, you know, and I'm trying to get a couple on the podcast here and coming up, is that it's, I can't imagine the turmoil, you know, just the stress, this additional stress that it is putting on their family lives and personally and everything. Like you said, suicide was up. You have, you know, and all of that that you're seeing in the city. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. During the COVID time, when shortly after the big outbreak of COVID, you know, we had a rash of riots and looting that was going on here in New York City, and there were quite a few fire trucks that were being assaulted and. You know, the windows were being smashed. They were pulling up to cars being burned, trying to put them out, and were being assaulted and bricks being thrown at them and thrown at the vehicles. It was a scary time for all first responders. And
yeah.
At 7 o'clock every night, they used to bang the pots and pans. I don't know if they're doing out near you, but 7 o'clock every night, it was like first responder appreciation. And they would, the whole general public throughout the city would get out and clapping and screaming and, you know, showing their appreciation for what we're doing. As soon as the riots broke out, that was the end of that. You know, you're right back to where you were just before the whole outbreak happened. And you could not pay me enough to be on a street corner in an NYPD officer uniform at this point. And what they're going through right now is pretty tragic, you know, not just for themselves, but throughout the country. I have many friends who have transferred over from NYPD to the FDNY. And, you know, I have friends who were, you know, I had gone through high school and college with that became officers. And the unfortunate part of being a police officer, then one of the differences I personally have noticed is that you become very jaded. You become very cynical. You see the worst of the worst of the people. And so you think that everyone is a perpetrator. Everyone is carrying a gun and everyone, you know, how's this person going to kill me? So They become very, their size up and their attitude definitely changes. You know, with firefighters, I look at a building. I look at how this building is going to kill me. You know, how is this building going to collapse on me? Where's my front entrance? Where's my second means of egress? Where are the windows I can jump out of? Every building I go into, every firefighter is doing that size up. Yeah. As a police officer, your size up is other people. And how is this person going to kill me? How, and they're really fearing for their lives. I had a class on advocacy at school and became a rather heated discussion. And I jumped into the mix of it on the tail end because it was at a time where there were a lot of deaths at the hands of white officers and blacks. And it was unfortunate, but I had spoken with a bunch of my friends who transferred over to the FDNY, and they said they hated every day of it. They said the last thing that they wanted to do was to pull their gun and shoot somebody. They are fearing for their lives. As soon as that gun comes out and their hand is on the trigger and you know, because they can unfortunately get a call for, you know, a 20 something year old male, black hoodie, black pants. And unfortunately, you know, grad school has really opened up my eyes to that whole aspect, and that's almost become the uniform in certain areas. You know, my parents never had to have that talk with me, you know. Black parents have to have that talk with their children, how to act in front of the police officer so you don't get shot. You know, that's a horrific thing to have to do, to have that talk with your child about that, how to act, how to, you know, what to say, what not to say. My white privilege, I've never had to have that. When they pull up to a street corner and they're telling somebody, you know, put your hands on top of your head, you know, put your hands where you see them, and they're fearing for their life and they have the finger on the trigger and they're just, you know, get down. Said, some of my friends who did it said it was the most exhausting thing. And I would have to do that 4 or 5 times within my shift. He said, I hated every single day going to work. I am fearing for my life of what this person is going to do to me. And you can easily see how if one shot rings out, then that
Yeah.
They do not want to be in that position. You know, they just want to get home at the end of that tour. And I'm sure there were so many early retirements that had occurred after all these riots. You know, yeah. I feel for both sides, you know, I really do. I'm a supporter of both sides. You know, I guess social work has made me a bit more liberal minded, I guess, in my older age. And I can see both sides, you know, Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. You know, can't we all just get along already? You know,
right.
There's definite differences. There's definite systemic racism that has occurred and continues to occur. You know, it's really an unfortunate turn of the time, but unless we start with the little things and try to bring up our children to be not possibly as our forefathers were, maybe we can possibly make a little small difference down the line.
Yeah. Hey, let me end on this note, Joe, is that taking you back to the firefighter, you know, perspective, if you could plant one thought into firefighters that would lead to an action, what would that thought be?
Balance out your risk versus reward, I guess. In work and life, you know, what is it that I'm doing? What am I risking to get what return on investment here? Am I risking my life on the job in a situation that is, you know, a vacant building that is probably has nobody inside of it and occupied? And in life, am I risking my family at some poor judgments that I'm making in overloading, you know, the areas that are taking away from them? You know, what reward am I getting by helping others without helping my own family first? How am I prioritizing others over my own home life? How am I prioritizing my education over my home life? You know, and then in reverse, how am I prioritizing social events that are work related? Because we have a lot of social events, and how is, you know, what is the reward I'm getting from being out with the guys? What's the downside of that? What risk am I risking a healthy relationship down the line? Risk versus reward, I would say, on the job and off the job.
Excellent. And Joe, is there anything that I did not ask you that you'd like to talk about, or maybe that we didn't go far enough into, anything like that?
Nope. I guess just on the peer support aspect of it, to realize that it's okay to be not okay, and not everyone needs to, you know, be on a clinician's couch, you know, in therapy for years over an incident that may have happened. And quite often they're not incidents that are on the job. It's not the PTSD from, you know, the life and death situation that we're put into on a daily basis. It's just life. And how many times does small little areas that we're not being able to address throughout time become bigger issues later on in life? How many times do firefighters and officers on the job wind up having to do disciplinary charges against somebody for an action that could have been addressed many, many years prior to that time? You know, was it a substance abuse issue? Was it a relationship issue? Was it something that was could have been addressed way, way earlier before it got to the point where this member is almost about to lose his job, you know, potentially die by suicide, get to that point where his mental health is so far off track that if more of us were aware of some signs and symptoms and maybe just put the phone down and have a face-to-face conversation with somebody and ask them, how are you doing? And wait for that response rather than the typical, you know, how you doing? All right. Yeah, how you doing? I'm okay. Nobody really cares about that answer.
Right.
Recognizing that somebody might be going through a lot more than you can actually understand. And not everybody needs to be in therapy for many years, you know, a heart-to-heart conversation and not telling somebody what they need to do, but maybe offering them some guidance and some options for what they can do. And if it needs to go by there, you know, typically for any critical incident, a couple of weeks, a few sessions with a therapist is usually more than enough to get somebody back onto the road. But just that initial hump, if they don't get that out, they keep stuffing it down. And then years down the line that, you know, everybody has a 10-pound backpack of life that they stuff all their stuff in. And how many people are walking around with 8-9 pounds of life stuffed in there? And now they have a big major event happen, you know, like COVID. Yeah. And now they're working, you know, 24-hour shifts and they're doing CPR, you know, 5-10 times in a 24-hour shift. And they're coming home exhausted and they're probably not in the most healthiest relationship to begin with. And what is their coping mechanism? Are they drinking on a little more than they should? And then they're going right back into another 24-hour shift. So they already had 8-9 pounds and now they get 5 pounds dumped onto their backpack and it's just overloading. You know, try to keep that at a normal level, 2-3 pounds of garbage that we're carrying around in life so that it doesn't get to the point where it's bubbling over all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I work with a guy, he gives the eyedropper analogy. Like everyone has a cup. Everyone has a cup when you first start the job. And then every little incident you go to, there's a little eyedropper. Oop, a little dropper. And then over time, you know, 20 years, that cup is going to become pretty full. If you don't continue to empty out that cup a little bit, a big event happens and it's like taking a 5-gallon spackle bucket and pouring it on top of that cup. It's just going to overflow and there's going to be collateral damage that's going to occur. So try to help out this work-life balance in your self-care with yourself, with others, and surrounding yourself with a good social support network of people that are going to call you on your nonsense and let you know when you need to put the brakes on and maybe focus on some areas that you're just running through blind just because you're on autopilot, you know, day-to-day life activities.
Yeah, we often do. We go through that autopilot and we go. And one of my favorite songs is Don't Blink by Kenny Chesney.
Yeah.
And you know, before we know it,
7 years old, you take a nap and then you wake up and your high school sweethearts become your bride.
You know it. And I'll tell you, I always ask this question in my workshops that I do on work-life balances is that I say, you know, there's a window of time that closes. And a great example right now is that my two youngest children, my daughters, they're juniors and seniors in high school. So I have this much time. How many more daddy-daughter dates can I do with my senior before she goes off to college? Yeah. Then we know anyone that has a child that has gone off to college, we know they don't come back very often. And my oldest daughter, she graduated from Ohio State, then went out to Southern California for graduate school, graduated from there this past May, and now is taking her first full-time career job in Los Angeles. So it's just one of those things where, you know, what do we need to do now that we might not be able to do a year from now, 2 years from now, or whatever that time is. And, you know, I also got to experience that when my father was in home hospice, you know, and spent those last 3-4 months of his life, got to spend a lot of time with him because I chose to prioritize that in my life. And I chose to, that's where I'm going to spend my time because that window is going to close. And that's what I encourage others to sometimes is like what you're saying, you know, just pause, you know, we're running through this life so fast. Can we pause and say, what do I need to focus on? Cause it may not be here in the near future, you know? So I really love your advice and talking to you today. this morning on the podcast. And Joe, I sincerely thank you, and I want to thank you for being my guest and for your insights into FDNY and through the COVID-19 and even your post, you know, with the 9/11 and all of that. But I want you to know that I really appreciate you and appreciate you sharing your stories with us this morning.
Thanks, man. My pleasure.
Absolutely.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.